Horror movies with monsters or aliens in them used to be called creature features, and Sir Peter Jackson cut his teeth, as it were, on one in his early days. We've seen a few of them made in New Zealand over the years, and recently there was the movie Megan, made in Auckland with a New Zealand director and producer, about an AI doll with attitude. The latest homegrown creature feature has a trailer that racked up more than a million views in its first week of release in the US. It's called The Tank.
What is it?
It's a water tank. All these old types of places would have run off rainwater.
Something kind of tank. What do you think it is?
I don't know. Oh, sweetie.
Something's trying to get in.
It's very much a local film, and it marks a return to New Zealand and to directing here by Scott Walker, with the sizeable assistance of Sir Richard Taylor, who led the team at Weta Studios. Weta created the creature in this feature. Actually, there's more than one, but we'll just leave that there. Tēnā kōrua, Scott and Sir Richard.
Hello there. Nice to talk to you.
Great to talk to you both. Now, Scott, let's start with you. You directed a pretty successful movie on your debut, The Frozen Ground, based on the true story of a serial killer. That story was waiting for you. This one came to you. How did you get the idea?
I'm sorry, I've unmuted myself now.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. We suspected, but then we also thought about that creature. So let's just
it's
over
sitting
to
right
you.
Beside me. I'm sorry, what was the question, Susanna?
How did you get the idea?
Well, my family and I were living in Los Angeles, and we came back just prior to COVID to spend some time back here, renew visas. And the plan was I had another project to go back to, and then we were going to come back here. We've got two young boys. And when COVID happened, the US consulate froze stamping our passports with our new visas for 7 months. So then we went into the lockdown here, and a really old friend said, well, you're homeless, so why don't you go and stay in my old house north of Auckland while you figure out what you're going to do? And it was built on top of a nice big water tank. And one day we ran out of water and I had to climb down into it. And then that night I had these nightmares about creatures oozing out of taps and eating my family, which luckily they didn't. And that was the idea for the tank.
Where did you shoot the film? I, of course, I need to do this as a, I don't know, whatever you call it, but I live in West Auckland and I live with a tank because that's our source of water. So there we go. So thank you very much. That's all I have to say to you.
Not far from your home, probably, we shot it.
So where did you shoot it exactly? It's supposed to be in Oregon on the west coast of the US, and there are some very tall trees that seem to be American.
Yeah, we found a great place. I grew up on Bethel's Beach, so we were out there climbing around the hills and found the cottages up there, which were bizarrely exactly how I'd written the cottage in the script. And it's just got such a epic outlook from up there that, you know, on a cloudy day kind of looks very Oregonian. And so we shot the exteriors of the cottage there, and then we went to Riverhead Forest, which has an amazing sort of old growth look to it, sort of very pine trees with amazing ferns. And we shot the forest sequences there. And then the rest of it we shot on a stage in West Auckland.
Wow. And the acting, let's go there. It's great, isn't it? And the actors are ours. Matt Whelan, Narcos, The Luminaries, and Luciani Buchanan, The Night Agent, Sweet Tooth. It's great that you can come home and find this cast.
Yeah, it was terrific. I mean, we made this in the middle of COVID, so there was a few additional challenges, but the bonus of that was a lot of people were here and couldn't really leave, so we had them. I met with both Matt and Luciani, and they were both had done fantastic auditions, and then we did a chemistry test to sort of see how they would get on together. And it was, they were terrific to work with. You know, and then we have we haven't got a huge cast, but we got a great eclectic group of New Zealand actors. So it was a great experience.
There's an interesting observation at the start of the movie about how when people die, surprising secrets are often revealed about hidden aspects of their lives. That's certainly true here. How much do you want to give away concerning what Matt and Luciani's characters are faced with? A plot synopsis, please, if you can.
It's set in 1978, and it flashes between 1978 and 1946, which is when Matt's parents first took over the house and dug the hole and built the water tank. And so it starts in 1978 with them learning that his long deceased father actually owned this house and the deed for it had been lost somehow between lawyers. And so his mother has recently passed away, and so they inherit this property on a remote part of the Oregon coast, which is actually called Hobbit's Bay, which is why I chose it, because it has a nice New Zealand touch. And so they go to visit him. And, of course, they awaken what the grandfather or the father awoken in the 1940s. I wouldn't say much more, but it's to do with there was an idea about we don't really learn from past generations as well as we should. And sometimes we repeat the not so good. And that always comes back to bite us, literally.
Exactly. It comes back to haunt us first and then bite. Sir Richard, good morning. When Scott dropped in with this idea, what did you think?
Well, we had a terrific discussion, actually, because I told Scott immediately that I'd had my own tank experience. I grew up in a share milker's cottage in south of Auckland, and we had a corrugated water tank, and the water turned brackish, and indeed it was a blackbird in the water, and been the smallest in the family. Of course, in I went, and it was a literally living nightmare. So I was completely hooked from the moment that we first talked about the idea.
We see scary creatures. I do not do well with horror movies, but we see scary creatures, properly see them, unlike the smudged or the brief versions we see of monsters and other horror films, not naming any in particular. Where do you start with an idea like this, Sir Richard?
Well, normally you start obviously with the script, but in this case, Scott wrote us the most extraordinary and detailed, almost a university-level biology paper on what this creature was, what he imagined it to be. And then him and I just started riffing over the phone. I'd send him some visual information. He'd send me some stuff he had found. One of our designers, Max, got involved, and he did some early concept art. And very, very quickly, within a matter of a couple of weeks, we spun up the idea of what this creature would look like, and started to present digital models to Scott that thankfully he chose one specifically, and there you have it. One of the things to be aware of is that Scott decided from the beginning that he wanted it to be a physical creature. That meant that it had to fit onto an actor, and that defines to a great degree the physical attributes of the creature, as opposed to if you did a digital creature, you can do almost anything that you would choose. So that confined the design to some degree, but that's a good thing because it allows us to then build on the physical anatomy of the actor and really work from there.
Let's get further into this, Sir Richard. One of the reviews I saw said this is a film that hinges on its creatures and Weta Workshop delivers. Can you tell us more about how you delivered? You hired a noted contortionist, for example.
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you start on a project, your creature, if it's a creature suit, it is only as good as the actor that's going to wear it. And it's imperative, therefore, that you find the right person to wear the suit. And I talked to Scott about what he was looking for, and I put the word around a collection of friends, casting agents, etc. And within a day or so, the first person's name popped up, Regina, and we brought her in, and she turned out to be so extraordinary. I literally couldn't believe what she was able to achieve. Now, when you hire a contortionist, which we've done a few times in the past, you ultimately don't really use the attributes that a contortionist can do in a traditional manner. We're not interested in their ability to twist themselves into knots. What we're interested in is the physicality, the capability, the incredible skill they have in utilizing their body to do really amazing things. And this performer instantly demonstrated that to us. So I personally couldn't believe it. I rung up Scott and I said, I think we found the person in the first casting call. Scott watched the tapes, talked to Regina, and there you have it. We ended up with this incredible performer as our first and only choice.
Isn't that great? Because the process of finding people for roles can take time.
They can sometimes, if you don't get it right. A greatly important part of being a creature suit performer is the ability to zen inside the costume. It's hard to describe to people how taxing it can be psychologically. You've just got to have an incredible sense of control and purpose. Remember that the actress inside the suit is confined inside a very heavy silicon suit that has to look like that of a salamander-like creature. She's wearing an animatronic head with all the mechanisms working inside it. She is underwater most of the time, so acting, actually holding her breath underwater. And then she's almost completely blind in the suit because the head protrudes a long way off her own head. So and then she's fighting the actors. So the ability for someone to actually achieve that was extraordinary. And Scott ultimately directed Regina, and he can speak quite significantly to the incredible control that she had.
Scott, let's pick up on what Sir Richard's been saying. First, could you speak to how you actually directed Regina, some insights? Because the first question that comes to mind is, how long was she in that suit for at a stretch?
Well, she would have been in the suit on any day for probably 12 hours. Because when we were filming with her, we were really focused on her. And so we needed her to be ready to go into the tank or into the forest or wherever. And really it started with the very beginning when Richard and I were talking, and I said to him, part of the brief for what the suit needs to be able to do with the performer is be able to be a complete suit. So we're not talking about, we'll just do a close-up of a claw and then the back or the head or something. I wanted to have this very physical attack fight sequences, some of them happening in a forest, some of them happening in the tank underwater, and just shoot them as live as possible, so that the suit then needed to be, you didn't know whether suddenly she was going to be flipped and thrown out of the water or whatever, and you might see a part of her which doesn't have a suit on. So it had to be this full suit at all times, which was really, you know, when Richard talks about heavy, although it's actually quite light as a suit, it's still, I think, something like 30-something kilos. And Regina is, I think, 5 foot at best. And so she's wearing all of this weight. And so the directing was, we brought a fantastic guy on, Shane Runge, who actually Richard introduced me to, and to really help Regina create what this creature is, how it would breathe, how she could center herself within the suit underwater so she can stay calm, but also perform. And so with a combination of, we were in some ways unlucky, but in other ways very lucky with that last long lockdown we went through, because the suit by that stage, we were literally about to start shooting and then we went into the lockdown and so we couldn't. So it gave Shane and Regina and Richard and the team down in Wellington extra time to rehearse and film how does the creature move. And so we got a bit of a break in terms of seeing which way she was able to move and what would look really great, what didn't work quite so well. And then I was able to adjust the script accordingly so that we were focusing on trying to make the creature move as best as possible. And, you know, as there were times when I really felt for Regina, especially the underwater fight stuff, which went on for hours and hours and hours. And it was completely dark. A lot of stunt people underwater all around her. She had no headroom when she would come up. She only had about a foot and a half, as you'll see in the film. So she couldn't even burst up without the risk of smacking her head on these sort of fake stone sets. You know, there were times when it was like, crikey, okay, you know, is she okay? And making sure she's fine. But like Richard said, the first time she came in, one of the things that I was really interested to see if she could do is that if she would, as a performer, be comfortable taking a running leap at someone, landing on their, basically their head, as though they were a cat attacking you. And so Richard had one of his largest guys from the workshop come and stand in front of the camera, and Regina took a flying leap, landed on his head, and proceeded to tear his head off, which was fantastic.
Just like that.
And it just shows, it showed us, okay, she's got the grit and she's got the grr. So I thought, okay, you know, she's the right person for the role.
Scott, the film, and no horror film is a horror film without this, it has some very scary monster sounds. How did you make them?
The scenes?
The sounds, the monster sounds. I mean, the music, the score is great, but the actual monster sounds, is there any little, what can you tell us about where they came from?
It was quite a long, long process. I started off with this idea that like a Tui, maybe the creature had dual voice boxes. And so that was an early idea. And then we just had a couple of guys, Nick in particular, who we almost broke him, with him doing sort of 2 weeks of almost 16, 18 hour days, just trying to get, he was so amazing because, you know, you never want the same sound to be repeated, which would be very easy to do. So everything needs to express another aspect of the creature's character, I suppose, where, you know, because it's a sentient being, so it thinks and it has emotion, and you want the sounds that it makes to represent that. So we went through quite a few ranges of what sort of sounds does it make when it's sort of nesting, what does it make when it's sniffing and trying to explore for food, what does it sound out like when it's calling another one across the forest at night, and then what does it sound like when it's attacking and eating. So we built this sort of bank of sounds. And then Martin Brinkler, the editor, and I and Nick would sort of go through and find the variations that created the sound of the character to evolve throughout the film. And then we were very, very fortunate to have an incredible composer, Max Arouge and Lorne Balfe, to join, who are old friends of mine, but to help with the score to sort of complement the creature.
Definitely does. So, Richard, you've won 5 Academy Awards, and I'm imagining each time you bring your name and skills to a project, the pressure's on. There's a high level of expectation.
Yes, well, there's a misconception that we only focus on large-scale projects, the sort of things that we've been very fortunate enough to collect those awards for our team. But we're keen to work on any project ultimately, and something like Scott's project. Scott came on the tail end of a small horror movie that we'd just done in Australia called Sting. So we love working on these type of projects. And, you know, the team at Weta Workshop inspired by the creative process as much as they are by the script and the project itself. And, you know, something like the tank and the part that we have played in it is ultimately tribute to the creative craftsmanship of a small team of people that just throw themselves into every project and deliver something as special as this. This project was an interesting one, just for the creature feature aficionados that may be listening. Firstly, the question, why is the suit so heavy? Because normally we'd build a suit in foam latex, which makes it nice and light. But because we wanted to create a salamander-like character, We had to do it in silicon, so it had the translucent quality to its skin, hence the weight. But also, because of the fast turnaround that we originally had, we did our first ever fully 3D printed suit molds, where we scanned Regina, made 3D printed cores, and then actually digitally sculpted it all and 3D printed the molds, which was very, very exciting for us. So always trying to just, even on a small, what would be considered a small project in scale to something like a Lord of the Rings or a King Kong, etc., always trying to just push the very edge of what gets us up in the morning, I guess.
Indeed. And let's just ask you a little bit more about Weta Workshop. How's it going? How many people have you got there? What's day-to-day like for you at this point? It's a household name.
Well, we've got 350 people across six businesses. Our design and manufacturing business for our screen industry work makes up about half of our team. We've got a location-based experience division, which does things like the Gallipoli, the scale of our war. We've just done the world's largest duty-free shopping mall in China, where we've done the atrium for that company, which was great fun. So just a very diverse spread of work, but also a collectibles business. Of course, we have a tourism offering where we've got Weta Workshop Unleashed in Auckland and our tours down in Wellington. We're doing a digital game at the moment through our company and our consumer products, which we are very excited. We've been making those for 24 years now. And I've just returned from China as we're working on two large metaverse projects as well at the moment. So a pretty diverse array of work, but that diversification allows us to hire a broad spectrum of people, especially the young digital natives that come through New Zealand high schools, universities today that are looking for something different and interesting in their career that we hopefully can offer them through this diversity of different things that we do.
Oh, that sounds so fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. I know you weren't necessarily expecting the, hey, what's happening now? But Scott, we're pretty sure the tank won't tank, just to coin a phrase. I know I had to put it in there. How's it doing so far? It's early days, of course, but how's it looking?
Well, we're excited to see it hit New Zealand and Australia on the 8th of June in theatres. It is a low budget independent film, so it doesn't have a major studio rollout, unfortunately, like a Megan or a Evil Dead. But we have a fantastic group of, I suppose, independent distributors in all parts of the world. And so in the US, it released there a few weeks ago. And I think within 3 days, we were the number two top movie chart on Apple TV, which is obviously got 25 million subscribers in the US. And to be number two meant we beat out every major studio film that was a horror film. So the only one we couldn't beat was Scream 6. So one day we might come back and do that. But that was just quite amazing. The trailer, when it was released, was number one in the US for 2 weeks, which was extraordinary. And this is, you know, with very limited marketing support. You know, we're doing as much as we can with every distributor. And it's rolling out around the world. So far, so good. And we will see how it goes here in a week or so.
Very good. Well, just to finish, Scott, what's coming up for you? And then I'll also come to you, Sir Richard. I'd love to know if there's anything else you can reveal.
I've got a couple of projects at the moment, actually with Richard on both of them. One is a vampire apocalypse, which is triggered by global warming and prehistoric pathogens being released. So that's good fun. And the other one is a werewolf comedy and about set in California, and it's which we will be doing here, and is about werewolves as second class citizens and discrimination, and but it's wrapped up in a lot of blood and a lot of fun and a lot of great creatures. So that's the immediate next.
Very good. And Sir Richard, anything else you can reveal?
Well, we've got a lot of exciting projects on the go at the moment. It's great to be coming out of the challenges of COVID and seeing the entertainment world come alive again. It's, I'm just off to the Annecy French Animation Film Festival to celebrate and do a presentation along with the director of a great short film that Pukeko Pictures, our children's television production company, made last year called Yellow Dove, and that's amazingly exciting. But I also just take the chance to make a plug that my wife's cinema, The Roxy in Miramar, is actually screening The Tank next week, and keep an eye out for that and try and come along, anyone that lives in the local area that might be listening to this, because, of course, we'd all love to celebrate a good Kiwi horror flick be made in our country, coming back to New Zealand for screening. So we appreciate your interest in what we've all done.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Scott Walker and Sir Richard Taylor. Great speaking with you both.
Thanks a lot, Suzanne.